This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me, Joyce Goh, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that takes you behind the news headlines of the day to the real stories. Our guest today is Alia Azhar. She's a journalist with Malaysia Kini. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I know it's, of course, your first time, and you're here because you've written a series of special reports on the political and economic sentiments on the ground there in Sabah. And we want to get into this because partly because of the kind of headlines Sabah has actually been producing over the last couple of weeks, not least because of the arrests of Shafi Abdal. But let's, before we get to that, can we ask you how this idea of a special report came about, and why is not just simply a question of having a news story, but a special report? And you went out there, and it took time. Who pitched it, and what was the thinking that went behind doing this report?
Well, the thing is, with Malaysia Kini, we don't have correspondents in Sabah. We don't have correspondents both in Sabah and Sarawak. So the only way for us to determine what's really happening in Sabah is for us to go there ourselves. And with the 14th general election just around the corner, every reporter is expected to focus on at least one state. So here was one of my assistant news editors going around asking who wanted to go to Sabah. So I thought, why not? I mean, I was still figuring out which state I wanted to focus on. And another reason was because we wanted to know Warisan's chances in the upcoming general election. We wanted to see whether Warisan would be giving BN a run for their money. So, yeah, that was the reason why we decided to go to Sabah.
So what did you find out from that? And how long did it take for you to spend in Sabah? And how long did it take for you to work on these stories that you've come up? Because you come up with a series of stories, I think about four, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how long did you work on that? And what did you find out from your visit to Sabah?
I was in Sabah for 11 days altogether. The first 6 days were spent in Kota Kinabalu, as well as Tenom and Ranau. The last 4 or 5 days were spent in Sampurna. So, the flow of our project was slightly affected due to the spate of arrests involving top Warisan leaders. I mean, we were supposed to be there to collect general information on Warisan. But, I mean, there was this spate of arrests, so we couldn't just ignore that, right?
I want to come back to the question of, how Malaysia Kini views, and from an editorial standpoint, mm-hmm. the importance or the interests of your readers for news coming from Sabah, for instance. Right? You said you don't have correspondents
yes.
from the two major territories that make up Malaysia. And is that because your readership is primarily peninsula-based and also people from the peninsula, for whom Sabah is a kind of slightly far-off place and the politics of which isn't of immediate consequence to them?
Yes, that's one of the reasons why we don't have correspondents in Sabah, because most of our stories are based in the peninsula. Yeah, that's correct.
So coming back to your stories, Alia, what did you find out when you were there, the sentiment, and you said you were there to find out about Warisan and mm-hmm. the chances. So could you share with us, what did you find out from that?
Well, the thing that struck me was the fact that most Sabahans only care about getting food on the table. Not to say that this isn't a concern for peninsula voters, but, I mean, just take a look at their average monthly income. It's the lowest in Sabah. Obviously, bread and butter issues affects them more than they do voters in the peninsula. And apart from that,
is it palpable? You have a quote here, and I'm going to quote you. You quote somebody from Kinabatangan,
uh-huh.
and he says, he says, I think in reference to 1MDB and the whole question of the talk around 1MDB, he says, yeah, I mean, the educated people maybe are interested, but for the most part, people only want, I'm going to quote here, what they only want is cash, water, tanks, and I imagine that's not an armored tank, but like tanki
water tanks.
Sorry, I didn't read armored that properly.
Tanks.
And housing projects for the hardcore poor, gas, rice, and sugar. Mm-hmm. That seems very basic.
Yeah, well, if you look at Sabah, most place, I mean, not to say most places, some areas don't even have access to clean water, electricity and roads. So it's, I mean, we can't really blame them for just wanting basic needs. So,
but who do they blame? When they look at the deficiencies in their state, if they see there's lack of electrification or clean water, do they say, oh, this is the you know, this is the fault of federal government or this is the fault of the state government? And, you know, and does it affect their political loyalties and behavior?
Most of the locals I spoke to blame the federal government. They say that they haven't been getting what they were supposed to get. So, but when I went to Boom Boom Island, for example, I mean, it's quite a remote island from Semporna Town. They said that they are still in support of BN because BN still gives them whatever they need. I mean, the basic necessities. Like, for example, when I asked them whether they would still support Datuk Sri Shafi'i, he said, you know, he's no longer with the government, so why would we support him? Unless he's in the government, then we would support him because him being in the opposition, he can't do much.
This sounds like very pragmatic, don't you think, Joyce?
But it looks like it's more of a survival. They're in survival mode because I think from what she found out, she spoke to some of them, they earn less than 1,000 ringgit, and they're telling her like it's hard to make ends meet, right? So what they do? What work do they do there, or is it just odd jobs, or is it just the earning power is lower there, or is it the jobs that they're doing?
The earning power is very much lower there. That's why one of the people I spoke to lamented how many young Sabahans are going to the peninsula. But then another guy said that it's not like Sabah doesn't have jobs. They do. Mm. But people are not willing to work in you know, jobs that pay slightly lower. That's why Datuk Sri Shafi'i saw this. In one of his speeches, he said that if Warisan comes into power, he would be focusing on vocational schools. Because, I mean, he believes that there is a potential in Sabah. It's not like, you know, people there can't do much. They can, but they...
I mean, do people say, well, you know, Shafi Abdal has been an UMNO leader for a long time in Sabah.
Yeah.
And then they say, well, okay, so now as Warisan leader, he's got all these great projects. He's going to be doing great things for the state. But he was in power. Mm-hmm. He was in government. Why didn't he do those things then?
Yes. Some of those I spoke to, those who weren't really completely enamored with Shafi, said that they saw this. He was in the government for more than 2 decades. Mm. And they were saying, you know, why didn't he do all these things back then? Now, why is he making these promises now? Why is he only saying that he will do this and that when he's in the opposition? So some of them somewhat blamed him. And they also blamed his rivalry with the current chief minister. So they are saying because these two people are, you know, not really the best of friends, it's the people who are suffering now.
This is Anifa Aman.
Musa Aman.
Musa Aman, sorry. Okay, we're going to be back with more on the question of Sabah with our guest today, Alia Azhar, a journalist with Malaysia Kini. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, a show that goes behind the headlines to speak to journalists for their views on various perspectives. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh, and our guest today, Alia Azhar, a reporter with Malaysia Kini, who recently authored a series of articles on economic and political sentiments in Sabah. I thought we'd begin, Joyce, by asking Alia about this whole idea of Sabah for Sabahans or Sabahans for Sabah. I mean, I know there's some sort of distinction that's made. Mm-hmm. You also note in your piece how people sing the state anthem. And I'm surprised if anybody here would know what the words to the Selangor anthem is. All Kuala Lumpur. And also, I'm going to quote you. He says, Sabahans don't care about issues concerning the peninsula. We only care about our rights. Right. What is that all about?
Well, with Sabahans, most of them believe that they haven't been accorded with the rights that they are supposed to get. So, I mean, for them, it's simple. They just want whatever rights they're supposed to get. Nothing to do about leaving Malaysia, you know. Nothing to do about that. So with Sabahan, it's quite simple actually. And Parti Warisan Sabah saw this. That's why their fight is all about regaining the rights of Sabahans.
Yeah. What are the rights that they're looking at?
Well, like for example, Sabah has many potential. I mean, it I mean, for Datuk Sri Shafiq, he saw this and he focused on this. He said that it's not like they don't have natural resources, they do.
Mm.
But previously, there was the cabotage policy, so it somewhat affected Sabah's earnings. So, with
this a policy in which goods that are imported have to go through a peninsula port before they're re-exported to East Malaysia, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore puts a little premium on the costs of goods coming into Sabah. So, but what about this idea? I mean, did you feel, because you were on the ground, any kind of anger towards people in the peninsula? Anger towards the fact that perhaps in the past, many peninsula people were working in Sabah, taking jobs, you know, and bringing with them a certain attitude about the peninsula versus the Sabah. Was there any anger you felt on the ground?
Maybe there was some slight annoyance. I wouldn't say anger. I mean, they're a bit indignant in getting their rights, but they're not particularly angry, because I mean, Sabahans, they're quite simple people, you know. They, whenever we talk about politics, they talk about it, but they don't really express what they really feel. So I mean, from that sense, we know that I mean that the anger is there, but it's not really expressed.
Do you feel that as a journalist from the peninsula, that people might have been more reluctant to be honest with you?
Yes, I was a bit worried about that, actually. So I had my colleague, Kini TV broadcast journalist Grace Aisha, who is a Sarawakian, to, you know, make the introductions first. I mean, although the accents of Sabahans and Sarawakians are not exactly the same, but I thought they would be more open to speak to a fellow East Malaysian as opposed to someone from the peninsula. So, but yeah, once we started talking, I mean, they were fine. They're friendly people. Mm. Yeah.
So coming back earlier, you mentioned that, well, you guys were there. That's when the arrest happened, right? So what were your observations about that? And do you feel like, are the views on, do you think these arrests will cripple Warisan in a way?
I don't think it will cripple Warisan, because based on my observation, they are actually gaining more sympathy and support from the people. And the people I spoke to, they're saying, no, why is there this double standard? You know, why aren't they going after people from BN? Why are they only going after Warisan? And why now? So, I mean, the spate of arrest obviously will somewhat affect Warisan, but I think it will work slightly for the better for them.
Could you tell from just your interactions with the people in the party that this is a party that is focused on building institutions, building structures, or is it largely, as we are told often, that, you know, these are personality-based movements, that often what you have in a place like Sabah is a lot of warlords.
Yes.
I mean, people, very strong personalities that, you know, are leaders of their communities, and they don't build institutions. Mm-hmm. They don't build strong parties. Mm-hmm. They just build a system of patronage around themselves.
So with people in Sabah, I think it's a mixture of both. They like how Warisan is going around saying that, you know, we're all about regaining the rights of Sabahan. They like that.
They like the message.
Yeah, they like the message. And the other thing is, we can't ignore the charisma of Datuk Sri Shafi'i. I mean, he's definitely well-known in Sabah. And the people there remember his contributions. I mean, despite critics saying that he could have done more for Sabahans. But, I mean, when I went to Sampurna, everyone there said they love him. I mean, everyone. So, even someone who admitted that he's a BN supporter said, you know, actually, I love Datuk Sri Shafi'i. But I mean,
it's just a general feel that
So for when it comes to whether they will support Warisan based on the leader itself, I mean, I think Warisan would get that chance. Yeah.
So when you were on the ground, what is the general feel for the upcoming elections, and did they share with you who they'll vote for?
Most of them are quite, I mean, like, for example, I said that some say they love Shafi'i, but some also said this doesn't mean that they will actually vote for him. So the thing about Sabahans, many said that they can be quite fickle-minded. Yeah, they can change their stance overnight. So one
So just like the politicians who lompat, like kata, which is always a thing, right? I mean, you look, you go to Sabah and you're doing elections, these wonderful posters, and there's a lot of visual imagery, you know, around the frog, the leaping from party to party, right?
Yeah, it's the same for, I mean, I don't want to make a conclusion on that, but I mean, that's what some people have been saying. I mean, for example, when BN comes into their village, they can they will say that, yes, I support BN. And then Warisan comes in and they will say, yeah, I support Warisan. But by the end of the day, I mean, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this interesting quote that you have, and this is from Junes Wong, if I'm pronouncing his name. He moved from the DAP to Warisan, and he's very positive about the DAP as a party. But he says, and I quote you, you have him quoted saying, "They didn't listen to me. They don't believe Sabah sentiments would rise. Now they realize things have changed." And it was for me very telling that he's talking about a peninsula-based party and how the leadership in the peninsula was just not reading the sentiments on the ground. And did you explore that whole idea of this failure of peninsula-based parties to really understand what's the ground feel?
Well, if I were to quote YB Daryl Liking, he said if a national-based party were to succeed, it should have been during the last general election. This time around, most people just want a local-based party to vote for. So, which was the main reason why both YB Liking and YB Wong left their respective parties. They thought that a national-based party wouldn't be a good vehicle for them to fight for the rights of Sabahans. They said, okay, like for example, if they were to work with Pakatan Harapan, what is the guarantee that Sabahan, the rights of Sabahans would be placed above everything else? So they are concerned about that.
Yeah. Well, what about the question of ethnic and identities, right? There's the Suluks, and then you have the Karazan Dusun, and are those communities able to, and people who belong to those different communities, able to see it as a Sabahan platform rather than their own individual, you know, communities, the Bajau and all that? Is that something that can be transcended, do you think?
I think it's something that can be transcended. The thing with Sabah, it's, I mean, it's different from how it is in the peninsula. Like here, you know, when we go around to restaurants, we normally see Malays hanging out with Malays and the Chinese hanging out with the Chinese. With Sabahans, it's not like that. Like, for example, during one of the remand hearings, we couldn't tell, you know, who were Malays, who were, you know, those from the Bajau community or those from the Karazan Dusun Murut community. They all were one. So that's distinctive about Sabah.
So from observation while you were there with the arrest, and Warisan is like over a year old, how do you think they're doing?
I think they're doing good, especially for a very, very young party. The thing that differentiates Warisan from the other opposition parties is, like I said, the focus on the fight for Sabahans. So, and also the fact that Shafi Abdul is their number one leader. So I think they're doing good. I mean, if you were to gauge their support based on the turnout, then I would say they have a very good chance. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. We're running out of time. Very quickly, are you going to be going back to Sabah anytime soon to follow up this with these stories?
Anytime soon, maybe no, but it depends. Maybe, I mean, if the general election were to occur in December, so I might go there, you know, maybe.
Is that your educated guess?
I don't think it'll be in December.
What's your guess?
It'll be next year.
March, maybe?
March. Maybe.
Yeah,
yes.
I think everyone's thinking it's going to be March. March.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much. Our guest this morning, Alia Azhar, reporter with Malaysia Kini. We've been talking to her about her special reports on Sabah. With me, Joyce Goh. It's coming up to the 10 o'clock bulletin. We'll be followed by Enterprise. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.